You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Now, Marty and Martha Roth are here to talk with us about the film Zero Dark Thirty, which is directed by Catherine Bigelow. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Tell us, just to start out, what's the film about?
Well, it's the story of the CIA's hunt for and eventual assassination of Osama bin Laden. The time span of the film is from September 11th, 2001 to May 2nd, 2011. And I should say the title, Zero Dark Thirty, refers to the timing of the eventual raid. And that's, I think it's Army speak for half after midnight. The narrative is channeled primarily through the obsessive efforts of a woman agent. Her name is Maya, and she's played by Jessica Chastain.
Now, the film's been stirring up a lot of controversy, so let's start with the big questions. In your opinion, is it American propaganda, and how does it fit into the American War on Terror program?
Well, I think the film is critical and not supportive, not an example of U.S. triumphalism, but that's always difficult. When a lot of people are saying, It's about torture. It's hard to say it's not. But in my view, it's a piece of art, and it doesn't take sides.
Well, I'll say it's not. It's not U.S. propaganda, but U.S. pathology, American global sickness, the obsession to get it right this time and somehow make up for the festering narcissistic wound of 9/11.
Yeah.
Now, several commentators have denounced Zero Dark Thirty as morally bankrupt, claiming that it justifies torture. What's your take on that issue?
Well, the critics are claiming both that it justifies torture by showing that torture is an effective weapon in warfare, and that it justifies torture by simply depicting graphic scenes of torture. It does the second, graphically depict torture, but not the first. I agree with Bigelow's response to these critics. She wrote in the LA Times, quote, "Those of us who work in the arts know that depiction is not endorsement. If it was, no artist would be able to paint inhumane practices, no author could write about them, and no filmmaker could delve into the thorny subject."
Right. The film undercuts the depiction of torture in a variety of small, subtle ways. There's a TV shot of President Obama declaring solemnly, "The United States does not torture." And it dwells a little bit too long on the broken face of the first detainee that we see. His name is Amar, and he's played by French actor Reda Kateb. He's trying to understand what is being said to him by the interrogators and to frame his responses. And I think we have to admire Amar, who is a brave man and honorable, although cruel and unusual things are done to him by his thuggish U.S. interrogators.
To go on with the ironies in the film, very early in the film, the principal U.S. inquisitor, Dan, claims that he has to get out of the field, that torturing prisoners has left him completely burnt out. A later overhead shot displays multiple wire cages at Abu Ghraib, each containing an orange-suited prisoner, except for one, which has a couple of pet monkeys.
Yes, the monkeys are charming, and one of them steals Dan's ice cream cone. He cuddles them, which is almost the only embrace in this almost three-hour film. They are his pets, they're soft and amusing, and later on Dan tells Maya, "They killed my monkeys. They said they were trying to escape." It establishes the fact that there's no place in this world for laughter, for pleasure, or for softness.
But nevertheless, U.S. senators and bloggers claim that the film shows torture effectively leading to the capture and death of bin Laden. One blogger, Naomi Wolf, called Bigelow torture's handmaiden and likened her to Hitler's filmmaking apologist Leni Riefenstahl, and this seems quite hysterical to me.
And to me. The controversy over torture seems self-serving and hypocritical to us. If the only argument that we have against it is that it is ineffective, that it never provides information, then we are indeed as bankrupt as our enemies claim. The bluster seems to me to stem partly from the open secret aspect of American torture. Of course the U.S. tortures prisoners, but we're not supposed to say so publicly, just as Israel has a nuclear arsenal, but no one is supposed to say that out loud.
Now, Marthy, you said that the film is art. Can you speak more about your take on that?
Yes, yes. It begins like a dream, in darkness, with barely audible voices on the soundtrack. Gradually, the voices become louder and clearer, and we, the audience, become aware that these are the voices of people who died in the 911 attacks. But the realization comes out of our confusion. After the first sequence of the enhanced interrogation, a.k.a. torture of a detainee, Zero Dark 30 looks almost random. It focuses, we see an exploding car here, a hotel bombing there. But as it comes to a point, we understand again, gradually, that we are tracking the attacks for which some entity called Al-Qaeda has claimed credit. This is an artful storytelling technique. You let the audience discover the point for themselves. And the framing, cutting, and editing of the film are also very elegant.
A key term in the film is craft, and it's both a strategic and an aesthetic concept. One whole segment of the film is called Tradecraft, referring to the work of spies. Maya claims at one point that what the U.S. agents are observing in their surveillance videos is not ordinary life because it's too smooth. It's tradecraft, she says. So in this film, artifice and deception are always crafted. Real life is clumsy by comparison. Underground actors, whether Al-Qaeda insurgents or the intelligence agencies of the Western powers, hide their nefarious activities behind the facade of craft. But you know, craft is also the word I would choose to describe the artistry of the film. It's just one of the best crafted films I've seen in a very long time. Precision tooled for maximum efficiency. The film is like one of the super sophisticated helicopters used for the raid on bin Laden's compound.
Oops, careful with that. One of them crashes in the courtyard. Those helicopters are Black Hawks, terrifying armor-plated vehicles that look like airborne tanks. And the raid does look like what it is, a home invasion. The night vision goggles and heavy armor make the SEALs look like monsters, and they murder the adults they encounter.
If tradecraft is the operative word in the film, then the CIA lacks it almost completely. In Zero Dark 30, the tradecraft of the United States sputters and falters for over 10 years. At the other extreme from tradecraft is torture, what you do when you have no idea what to do.
Now, you've described the filmmakers as working out an American obsession with revenge. How do they do that?
Well, bin Laden is killed, but there's no suggestion that any resolution has occurred. The only people who feel good about the way the film ends are the Navy SEAL raiders laughing in the locker room after their return.
But the central character, Maya, is utterly alone at the end of the film. She has been single-mindedly focused on her objective, and once it's reached, she has no purpose, she has no identity. We see her plugging away for years at this monumental task against opponents who are at least as clever as she is, with way less funding and fewer gadgets to play with. And take that away, what's she got?
And, you know, there are many great works of fiction which are devoted to a monumental obsession, just as we think Zero Dark 30 is. The Odyssey, Moby Dick, Victor Hugo's Toilers of the Sea and Les Miserables. But it would be hard to argue that Herman Melville is celebrating the American conquest of wild nature.
Now, Jessica Chastain has received a great deal of praise for her portrayal of the CIA agent that you speak of. Tell me more about her.
Well, beginning with her name, in mythology, of course, Maya is a name for the Earth Mother, but anyone less like a mother than this character would be hard to find.
One agent tells another, Maya's a terror. She just won't let go. And Maya's normally empty, slack face only comes to life when there is something happening in connection with her all-consuming task.
Yes, otherwise she's pretty much a blank. In one scene, the director of the CIA, played by James Gandolfini, joins her for lunch in the agency cafeteria and asks her casually how long she's been working for them. And she says, 12 years. I was recruited out of high school. So we understand from an earlier scene with a woman colleague that she has no private life and no friends.
And what other counter-espionage products has she been involved in? The director of the CIA asks. None. At the end of the film, the cowboys who participated in the raid high-five one another, but Maya sits blankly aboard a huge transport waiting to take her wherever she wants to go. She is the only passenger.
And the film ends on that question, where do you want to go?
You claim that the film is not U.S. propaganda. Is there any way you would have wanted it to be different than it is?
Well, since the film takes place in the in private spaces that are filled by the CIA and associated agencies, it's obviously blinkered by U.S. imperial narcissism. Only the U.S. dead matter. And no act of devastation committed by the U.S. against world populations matters at all.
Also, the U.S. seems to suffer from a kindred delusion that Al-Qaeda is a single entity with a singular mission instead of an umbrella under which thousands of Middle Easterners shelter their resentments of Western hegemony. That delusion is part of the disease.
Well, thank you both for joining me and for sharing your perspective on Zero Dark Thirty.
You're welcome.
Well, yes, thank you.
I've been speaking with Marty and Martha Roth about the film Zero Dark Thirty.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.